Welcome to Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Gratz, today with Steve Missler, our State House Bureau Chief, and we'll begin this week at the State House, where Governor Mills delivered her State of the State address that featured this theme.
We're not Washington. We're Maine.
The governor would return to that theme over and over again during her address. Steve Missler, she spoke for about an hour. What did we learn from the speech, other than her philosophic take on the difference between Maine and the nation's capital?
This comparison she was drawing between Maine and the nation's capital was interesting in of itself, because if you think about it, the day of her speech, the backdrop of that was the impeachment trial. And so without really pointing to that specifically, that was certainly on people's minds. And she was probably competing for attention with that trial, too. But in terms of what she said and the message she delivered, my take on it was a sort of appeal to the legislature to work together in a short session and also in an election year. Let's remember, all of the people she was speaking with are up for re-election in November. She personally has a lot riding on that re-election. Right now, the Democrats have full control of the State House, including the House and the Senate. You know, if she is to continue to push her agenda, she's most likely going to need Democrats to retain that control. Of course, Republicans have another agenda, but she was just sort of trying to appeal to them to work together. In terms of initiatives, not many surprises, really. They were furtherance of what she laid out in her agenda last year when she was inaugurated. That includes things like dealing with the opioid crisis, climate change, healthcare. And then there were a couple of other things that were not necessarily surprises, but perhaps new initiatives that we could see coming.
You know, you were talking about getting the legislature to work with her on things in this session. Last session, of course, that happened for the most part until they got to bond issues. Do we have any sense of what's going to happen on that front in this short session?
She did make an appeal for the Land for Maine's Future program and a bond issue on that. As you point out, that was on the table during a very short special session that took place back in August. And it failed to achieve the two-thirds majority that would have sent it to voters. And she was very upset about that, if you recall. There were a couple other separate bond issues, too. She did bring it up. She did bring up Land for Maine's Future again, but not other bonding initiatives. And I think the reason why she brought up Land for Maine's Future and perhaps not the other ones is that traditionally there is bipartisan support for the LMF program. And so maybe she just mentioned that one specifically as a way of sort of retaining this theme of working together. But in terms of whether or not she's going to have support for that, I think it will depend on the package that she wants. I mean, that was the issue when the package stalled, the bond package stalled for LMF back in August.
The governor also waded into the Central Maine power billing controversy, but again, not with any real specifics.
It was sort of, and it was a very oblique reference. I mean, she didn't even mention CMP by name. She made this reference to a company owned by a Spanish company, which of course is Central Maine Power or CMP. But there was no policy initiative attached to this. So it left a lot of people wondering what she really meant by it. We really didn't get any further clarification the next day. They just sort of reiterated that she's very concerned about these ongoing billing issues and the customer service issues that CMP has, which of course resurfaced again this week with these disconnect notices, which are now putting the company back into the spotlight and not in a positive way.
All right. We'll return to CMP in just a few minutes. But I wanted to ask you, too, about the Republican response to this. There also didn't seem to be a lot of specifics there that I heard.
No. And I think the reason for that, Erwin, is that she didn't give them a lot to latch onto to either endorse or oppose. You know, again, on the LMF bond, there was no specific amount attached to that initiative. The other initiatives she laid out in her speech, hiring more caseworkers at child care services and within the Department of Health and Human Services. I mean, who's going to dispute that given the impetus for those additional positions, which are the two deaths of two young children, which are a tragedy and are still being litigated? You know, they probably weren't very comfortable talking about opposing anything there, nor much else. It was very much, it was interesting to watch the Republican response because it was very muted because, again, I don't think they had a lot to respond to. There wasn't very many specifics in her State of the State address. And when there was specifics, there wasn't much there that they would probably oppose.
You know, the biggest single applause line she got the whole night was promoting a state equal rights amendment. I thought that was interesting. And it was interesting, too, the very next day we were talking to Kathleen Dillingham, the House Minority Leader, who said she doesn't think the Republican caucus is going to go for that at all.
The Equal Rights Amendment has become an issue in other state legislatures, too, because they're trying to push a constitutional amendment at the national level. And so it's become an issue that involves abortion rights now. And I think that's one of the reasons why Republicans are concerned about it and not ready to support it, because the pro-life movement is very much part of the Republican coalition.
All right. Now let's go back to Central Maine Power. And I ran into yesterday a canvasser who was seeking petition signatures to hold a referendum to block the big power line project through Western Maine. Now, the deadline for submitting signatures, I understand, is February 3rd. So we don't actually yet know that there's going to be a referendum, but the campaigning around it goes on.
It sure does. And it's increased in its negative tone. And even though we don't know if they're going to qualify for the ballot, as you just pointed out, I think CMP has certainly been acting as if it's inevitable, and we've talked about that quite a bit. What I've also noticed, too, is that they're really going after the opponents of the project. That includes the Say No to the Corridor group, even while that is generally perceived as a grassroots organization. There is another organization that is a dark money group that's been providing them some support, including in terms of gathering the signatures to get on the ballot that you mentioned, and also organizational support. Now, Central Maine Power and their Associated Ballot Question Committee, or PAC, wants to reveal who those donors are, because the suspicion is they are associated with the fossil fuel industry, which would stand to lose a lot of money if this corridor were to come to fruition. And so they have filed so far, and I expect another one will be coming, two ethics complaints with the Maine Ethics Commission, basically saying that they are required by law to disclose their donors. And those complaints will likely be heard in March. And politically speaking, I think it's smart politics to do that, because if they can show that opponents of this group are aligned with fossil fuel interests, that reinforces their case that this is actually a green energy project and that it will help with climate change, which has been contested in the past. And the other thing that they're doing is they're going after the Natural Resources Council of Maine, which is the state's probably premier environmental organization, which has been a fierce opponent of this project. They're really going after them. They're trying to suggest that the NRCM is in league with these fossil fuel interests. You know, we'll have to do some more reporting to bear that out. You know, at the end of the day, their tactics here and their strategy are probably the right ones. The question I have is whether those strategies and tactics will be subverted by Central Maine Power's public relations problems, which just continue to roll on. That's the key question, because they could really undo the political work that their ballot question committee is doing if Central Maine Power can't clean up its own house.
Yeah, and the latest incident, of course, being those disconnect notices that were neglecting to tell consumers that they can't actually do that in the wintertime without permission from the PUC. And then it turns out that there were like 1,000 of them that went out. I mean, that's not a small error.
No, it's not. And, you know, I mean, the CEO of CMP is out basically apologizing for that yet again. I mean, this is not the first time he's been forced to apologize for, I don't know how to put it, maybe the tone deaf or just inaccurate, in this case, customer service response.
And no, we're not going to let you, our listeners, get away from us without delving into impeachment and the trial currently underway and how Senator Collins is doing as she tries to display her independence to the voters who she'll be facing in the fall. Steve, what's the latest on that front?
One of her big pushes that she was quick to claim credit for was to adjust the rules that Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell had laid out, which would have condensed the time frame for opening arguments to basically 24 hours or two very long days in the Senate. And also the admission of testimony that's been gathered in the House. Initially, that wasn't going to be automatic. Turns out Senator Collins and a couple of other Republican senators appealed to McConnell and basically said, you know, this is a little bit too strident. We need to open this up a little bit more to make it more closely resemble the 1999 impeachment trial of President Bill Clinton. At the end of the day, I don't know what the practical effect of that will be, or even if it will be remembered, frankly, because what everybody seems to want, and this is reflected in public polling, is to hear from witnesses. Senator Collins has suggested that she wants to hear from witnesses and additional testimony.
I am open to witnesses. I think it's premature to decide who should be called until we see the evidence that is presented and get the answers to the questions that we senators can submit through the Chief Justice to both sides.
But when there were amendments made by the Democrats, she voted against that because the Democrats wanted the GOP to agree to that early on in the process. She's saying, look, let's hear the opening arguments first. Then we'll call for witnesses. Then we'll have votes. There's a lot of skepticism in D.C. about whether or not there will be enough Republicans to vote for those witnesses and that additional testimony. And so that remains out there. Frankly, it probably overshadows whatever it was that she accomplished in getting these two rule changes done.
Yeah, and for the record, they will need 4 Republican votes in order to agree to any witness or other information testimony. So it'll be interesting to see whether they get that, and whatever Senator Collins does, whether it will make a difference.
She's really getting a lot of criticism about this because what Democrats specifically, and perhaps some others, they want her to be more forceful about using her leverage as a potential swing vote and getting other people along to get these witnesses called right now. They don't want to wait until the last minute and then be, you know, shot down because they can't muster these 4 Republican votes. And that criticism really reminds me of this story in the New York Times and a quote that was in it, because it really mirrors the criticism that we're hearing about Collins right now. And that quote was, "She's always seemed very ineffectual to me. She makes a big thing out of voting every time and holding out to the last minute. But all she's holding out is her own vote. Every senator has 1 vote. If she'd announced her position earlier, if she had really had influence, she might swing other votes along with hers. That's power." Now, that was from an unnamed source, a Democrat, presumably. And it was also in 1972. And it was referring to Margaret Chase Smith. And it was a story about her pending reelection that year, which, of course, is the same case with Susan Collins. And of course, Susan Collins has emulated Margaret Chase Smith right up to the point where she's makes a big show of, you know, not missing any votes. And so it's just interesting to see how those two criticisms have seemed to have come together once again with a different senator.
Yeah. I mean, the one way in which Senator Collins presumably will be different is, by all accounts, Margaret Chase Smith didn't campaign all that hard in 1972, contributing to her defeat. One suspects Senator Collins will.
Not only will, Erwin, is.
Yeah. All right. Steve, thanks very much for the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Maine Public's State House Bureau Chief, Steve Missler, and that's Maine's Political Pulse for this week. We post new versions of our podcast each Friday afternoon. You can download it at mainepublic.org/politicalpulse or wherever you get your podcasts. You can hear most of the Political Pulse Sunday mornings during Weekend Edition and a shorter excerpt on Monday's Morning Edition. Willis Ryder Arnold is our producer. Music is by Rob Holt. I'm Erwin Gratz.